But the war between the states was only the second big chapter in the creation and imposition of state-run schooling for the benefit of the bankers. Soon after the war, the rapid development of technology and the growth of factories led to an increasing demand for more and more trained workers. Not highly skilled, mind you, but trained to take directions and to understand their dependency on their employers. After the turn of the century and the passing of the last generation who really understood what it meant to be a free American, the bankers, taking advantage of the conditioning that they had given us in the government schools that they had set up, moved onto the foundation that they had built during Reconstruction and erected the house in which most of us have been enslaved ever since. One of the things that Lincoln had refused to give to the bankers was paper money, printed by the bankers but borrowed and backed up by the government. After their 1910 meeting at Jekyll Island, they got that. But it wasn't that simple. Something still had to provide the actual collateral for this government debt, as well as pay the interest on it. The 14th Amendment had already provided the solution. Any 14th Amendment citizen was, by definition, subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. federal government. This was very different from being a free American. Government the servant and people the master had switched places. But how does a sovereign become a servant subject to the jurisdiction of a master? Simply by applying to become one. And there are quite a few forms that application can take, such as birth certificates, driver's licenses, social security numbers, voter registration cards, and marriage licenses. But the 16th Amendment furnished the real mechanism of control. The so-called Income Tax Amendment provided two things: a means to pay the interest on the banker-government-created debt, and financial bait to draw otherwise sovereign citizens into a contractual relationship with the government. The fact that the amendment was never legally ratified does not matter. If we have bound ourselves by a contract to pay the tax and to be citizens subject to the jurisdiction of the federal government, who says that we owe it? And to seal the victory of the federal government over the states, just to be sure that no state would ever get uppity and try to logjam their progress, the bankers also foisted upon us the 17th Amendment, changing the way that U.S. senators were elected. Now, instead of being chosen by the state legislatures, very much immune from external pressures and politics, senators were to be elected democratically and at large, subjecting their elections to the direction of whomever controlled the public sources of information, the schools, and the media. Remember now what Woodrow Wilson told us about the intentions of those who took over the schools for their own benefit. "We want one class to have a liberal education. We want another class, a very much larger class of necessity, to forgo the privilege of a liberal education and fit themselves to perform specific, difficult, manual tasks." The intentions of the liberally educated class were to make widget makers out of the rest of us. And this is about the time that the term human resources was coined. Since workers are trained and leaders are educated, it was necessary for the elites to water down the academic quality of the education that the general public received. And they started telling us that academics didn't really matter. What was more important was socialization, each one learning to be a part of the group and to look out for common interests. And America soon traded being a nation of independent businessmen, craftsmen, and family farmers for being a nation of employees, dependent upon bosses for paychecks, banks for mortgages, and government for a safety net. In 1921, the bankers and industrialists, with a little help from their friends in the White House, including Wilson's alter ego Edward Mandel House and his protege Allen Dulles, created the Council on Foreign Relations. Its membership was a who's who of government, banking, media, industry, and higher education. Of those elites, Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, wrote, "Those who manipulate the organized habits and opinions of the masses constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of the country. It remains a fact in almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by this relatively small number of persons. As civilization has become more complex, and as the need for invisible government has been increasingly demonstrated, the technical means have been invented and developed by which opinion may be regimented. In order to mold American schoolchildren to fit their needs, to create these two distinct and separate classes, the secret government had to take away or weaken the tools of their learning." And they started with reading and math. The Prussian system of schooling despised teaching all children to read. As former New York State Teacher of the Year John Taylor Gatto points out, quote, reading offered too many windows into better lives. It was a gift unwise to share with those permanently consigned to Lowe Station, unquote. And John Dewey, the head of philosophy, psychology, and pedagogy at Rockefeller's University of Chicago, blasted the traditional early emphasis on teaching children to read. Subsequently, the removal of teaching phonics as the primary reading tool resulted in millions of children never being able to master that vitally important skill. In 1918, O.A. Nelson wrote that Dr. Ziegler, who was chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations Educational Committee, had asked him to attend a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Doctors John Dewey and Edward Thorndike from Columbia University were there. The sole work of the group was to destroy our schools. We spent 1 hour and 45 minutes discussing the so-called modern math. At one point, I objected because there was too much memory work, and math is reasoning, not memory. Dr. Ziegler turned to me and said, Nelson, wake up. That's what we want, a math that pupils cannot apply to life situations when they get out of school. So if pupils come out of school now not knowing any math, don't blame them. The results are supposed to be worthless. Neither could American schoolchildren any longer be taught American history, how morally upright men, seeking to be free from the restraint of other men, had hewn a new land out of the wilderness and prospered by their hard work and application of moral principles. There was a larger community at stake now, a world community, controlled by the internationalist elites that must be the new focus. So history was gradually mythologized and replaced with social studies.